Well, I don't know if you remember the movie Multiplicity. Came out in 96, so you may not remember it. But it's a story about a guy who's got a lot going on. Doug Kenny. And Doug has so much going on that he decides that a great solution would be to produce more of himself. And so there's several Doug clones. And then, you know, after a while, the clones start realizing they need some help. And so they create a clone right here, number four, who, by the way, if you make a copy of a copy, it's not quite as sharp as the original. So number four didn't turn out quite like everyone had hoped. But Doug has got so much going on that he decides he's going to multiply himself several times so that he can get it all going on. And maybe you can identify with that. Maybe you can identify with this idea of having so many things happening at the same time that you wish that somehow there could be more than one of you. Maybe you could sprout another arm, you know, or whatever it is. It just seems like that there are always more things to be done than there are resources and time and attention to get it done. And so this movie kind of comes out of this feel that people have. And of course, for Doug, that ends up being a whole other set of issues that he has to deal with as well. But as we continue in the book of Mark this morning, we're going to talk, and we're going to be in chapter 1, verses 28 through 45. We're going to talk about time management. And we're going to be talking about effortless efficiency from the eternal Son. You know, as we think about Jesus, maybe it's never dawned on you that Jesus had to manage his time. Has that ever dawned on you? You know, until I really studied this, I hadn't thought much about how Jesus must have been in a very similar situation to us. In that he had only 24 hours in a day, 7 days in a week, to do the things that he needed to do. And so, as we think about, we consider our lives, I think every single person in this room has to deal with time and where they invest it. Everybody has the same 24 hours, but what we do with those 24 hours will determine, really, the quality of our life. It will determine whether we get to the end of our life and we say, man, that was so satisfying, and I feel fulfilled, and I lived a full life, or whether we get to the end of our life and we start to say, I could have done so much more, why did I waste so much time. And so time management is so crucial, so important, that I think that we ought to expect that the Bible would make comment on it. And we know that we're told to not waste time, but what about this idea of where to invest time? You know, I think most people will understand that the average 4.2 hours a day of viewing television in America is a problem, right? I don't think there's a ton of people in America who go, no, 4.2 is not nearly enough time. We've got to get people up to 6 hours a day for television. I'm sure there's nobody that thinks that. But the real question is, how do we determine the best use of our time? Between, like Doug was saying, you know, there's work and there's family, and what about time for me? You know, there are things that are important that we can invest our time in at any given moment. There are three or four things that are very important. And we'd like to invest in all of them simultaneously, but unlike Doug, there's only one of us, right? And unlike Doug, there was only one of Jesus. And so, as we look at this window into Jesus and how he managed time, I'd like to ask you to pay us special attention, because it's something that affects all of us. But before we do, I'd like to direct you to the bulletin. This is just an aside. If you have children who, or if you are have short attention span, Jamie and I and some others have kind of cooked up a device to help kids focus a little more on the talk on Sunday mornings, and that is that if you'll notice, and I'm going to give you the first one for free, at the bottom of this back page of The Scary Guy with Leprosy on the top left there, at the bottom there are some blanks. So there's a phrase in there that the secret phrase that if you would like to play along, and hopefully won't distract you entirely from the message, but as you see letters in the presentation that are in yellow like that, you can put them in order and discover the key phrase. And so that's just one way we're trying to help kids or other people with short attention spans to focus on the talk this morning, and there's the last thing I'm going to say about that. At any rate, so that's at the back of the bulletin. But anyway, back to this idea of Jesus and time management. You know, Jesus had gone from an obscure life in a backwater town of Nazareth, working as a blue-collar worker, to a major change right here in Mark chapter 1. And look at verse 28. It says, news about him spread quickly over the whole region of Galilee. Jesus had gone from obscurity, and he exploded into the spotlight in a matter of days. You know, I don't know if you can identify with that. Not a whole lot of us are rock stars in the room this morning, but this idea, if everybody knows who you are and that you have something to give them, guess what? There are lots of people with ideas about how you should spend your time all of a sudden. You see, right before this, nobody really cared what Jesus was doing as long as he got his project done. And then he could quit. And he could just reflect. And he could spend time alone. But all of a sudden, this private person who spent the first 30 years of his life as an unknown has become a complete public figure. And so he's beginning to have to deal with time. As a matter of fact, the entire book of Mark kind of points to this sense of urgency. There's this all of a sudden and immediately that seems to, these phrases that just keep popping up throughout the book, it seems that there's an urgency about the ministry of Jesus and about these 3 years. And so it's important for us as we live a life in a very frenetic world to think about how Jesus lived in the midst of this press. And things around him are just in this urgency. How does he live as the Son of God in the midst of that? And I'd like to suggest that for Jesus, and really for all of us, there are three time dilemmas. There may be more than three, but in this case, Mark looks at how Jesus deals with three separate dilemmas of time. The first dilemma, time dilemma, is deep versus wide. As we think about relationships, when we think about things in our life, We are in a kind of a quandary, a conundrum. Do we invest in a few relationships that are deep, or do we invest in many relationships that are relatively shallow? Do we have a wide network of people and influence? Are we seeking to expand the good that we can do in the world, or are we just investing deeply in a very few people? This is a dilemma, right? Because if you invest in those deep relationships, they may take a lot of your time. And you don't have the bandwidth to go out there and to focus on a whole lot of other things. And at the same time, you know, especially with social networking, social media, things like that, people can have networks that are hundreds of people wide. But they can sort of know lots and lots of folks, and yet maybe neglect those very close relationships that require that time and attention and focus. And I think, especially in our society today, and you know, the problem with preaching through the Bible is I don't get to preach stuff that I have mastered in my life. I got to preach stuff I struggle with, okay? So this is a struggle. You know, there is this kind of siren song, especially, you know, as I personally want my life to count for something. I want as many people as possible to know who Jesus is. And at the same time, I have family, I have dear and close friends. And so what do you do? How do you balance that? That's a great question. But the Bible is not silent on that. And if you look in Mark chapter 1, beginning of verse 29 through 31, support the base is the first point that I'd like to make or like to bring out from this passage. So Mark chapter 1, 29 through 31, it says, as soon as they left the synagogue, they went with James and John to the home of Simon and Andrew. Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever, and they told Jesus about her. So he went to her, took her hand, and helped her up. The fever left her, and she began to wait on them. Now, first of all, I want to notice that this is not necessarily, this isn't Jesus' family. This is his inner circle, though. Okay? So when I say support the base, now, a lot of us, that's the default is your immediate family, right? But there are other people that ought to be in our inner circle, our close friends, those people we can call at 2 a.m, right? And for Jesus, at this point, at this stage in his life, his immediate circle was Right here. Four people. James, John, Peter, and Andrew. That's who he was hanging out with. He was spending time with them. He went back to their house, or he went back to Peter's house, and James and John were with them. So this tribe of five people are traveling together, and when they get to the house, they discover that Peter's mother-in-law is sick. And, you know, Jesus isn't just performing a miracle here for show. He's not just trying to confirm the message. There's just a problem here, that the people who are in his immediate circle, his base, are having a problem. That there's unhealth there. And that Jesus needs to address that. He needs to deal with it. I think it's interesting that here's Jesus. He's called Peter away from his livelihood. And you wonder about what Peter's wife must have felt. Does anybody ever think about poor Peter's wife? Yeah, there she is. Yeah, my wife thinks about poor Peter's wife. At any rate, so here's poor Peter's wife, and Peter's left his livelihood, and I think it's just a wonderful blessing. It's a grace from Jesus for him to come to her house and heal her mom. And just to say, you know, I know this is hard. I know this is going to impact you, but I am who I say I am. And I can do what I say I can do. And so for Jesus, there is an immediate problem that comes up right here at the beginning of his ministry, that those who he's counting on to be on his side have an issue, and he needs to help them with it. And I think it's interesting here that Mark records that she pops up out of bed, and I'm guessing she was, I'm going to pick on you, I'm guessing she was probably like Reba. You know? But, you know, she's like, well, I'm better. Let's get cooking, you know? And I just think she jumped right at it, but I think that there's something about these relationships that are up close. These are the ones we should invest in, because these are the ones that are the ideal. That there is a mutuality, that there is a give and take in a healthy relationship. That while Jesus is caring for the needs of this lady turns around and cares for his needs. And we have to have that. You know, if every relationship we have, we're just constantly putting out fires, we have this God complex, and no one's ever investing back in a relationship, we are unhealthy and the people around us are unhealthy. That there needs to be a mutuality, and that's going to come up again and again. You know, God's inviting us into a mutual relationship. You know, he loves us unconditionally. No matter what we do, we cannot run his love. But at the same time, he's not wanting us to stay as constant takers. He's not the cosmic enabler. Okay? He is wooing us into a relationship of intimacy and mutuality. He will even allow things to go undone in the world if we don't do it. Because he wants that kind of mutual relationship with humankind. And he wants to model that for us. We need to have those relationships. So the first thing we need to understand when we talk about this dilemma of deep versus wide is that when there is unhealth in our immediate circle, and we need to define that, it's friends, it's family, we need to address it. We need to shore it up. We need to support the base. And then the second thing is we need to keep an open door. Look at verses 32 through 34 of Mark 1. Keep an open door. That evening, after sunset, the people brought to Jesus all the sick and demon-possessed. The whole town gathered at the door. Now get this. And by the way, you can put this as a note on your little bulletin since a lot of you are messing with it and stuff. But here's the thing. Following Jesus is inconvenient. Just write that down. Memorize that. Put that on the back of your hand. If you think that you can just, you know, get up at 7, have your quiet time, eat breakfast, go to work, come home, watch TV, go to bed at 9, and do that every day and follow Jesus, that is not the case. Okay. There will be times, if you invest in the lives of people, there will be times when they need you at 10 p.m. There will be times on your day off when you get a phone call that says, can you come over and loan me $250? Okay? If you invest in other people. And so I'm saying keep an open door. Keep an open door with our time. Keep a literal open door in our lives. If you are always protecting your time to the point that you never are inconvenienced, how can you be following Jesus? Because the simple fact is, Jesus, this is after sunset. This is the Sabbath. And so these guys weren't allowed to carry their sick people to Jesus until after sundown. Okay? That's why they waited until after sunset. So Jesus is hanging out at the house. He's chilling. It's been a long day. Okay? He's already healed his mother-in-law. He's put in his time. It's a Sabbath, you know? It's just, hey, this is my day to rest. Knock, knock, knock. Yeah. Hello? Yeah, I've got a sick person. Oh, okay, we'll bring him in. Hey, I got someone's demon possessed. I mean, this is nighttime. These people are busting in the door. Okay? Keep an open door. And it says the whole town gathered right there. You see, we've got to invest in the base, but if we use it as an excuse to say us four and no more, if we use that as an excuse to exclude people who have legitimate needs that we can help, we've stopped following Jesus at that point. Okay? The whole town was there. But I have to kind of temper this with a caveat, because guess what? People will take everything you give. People will take everything you give. And notice what Jesus does. This is subtle, but it's legit. It's here. It says, and Jesus healed how many? Many who had various diseases. He also drove out many demons. But he would not let the demons speak because they knew who he was. I believe that in verse 34, what we see is Jesus putting up his boundaries. I don't know if you're familiar with Cloud and Townsend. They wrote a book called Boundaries. This idea that when we begin to allow people to take from us beyond the point that we're ready to give, we've been invaded. Okay? Jesus was willing and ready to give, and we're going to see more about that. But it does not say in this passage that he healed every sick person, every demon possessed. That's important. He healed many. But you know what? At some point, he's like, you know, he didn't have a watch. But if he did, he would say, it's 1 a.m. Guys, I'm tired. They're tired. Go home. But there was a point at which he had healed many, but he did not heal all. He said, some of you are going to go home without. And he did not allow the demons to speak because they knew who he was. He wasn't going to allow these demons to set his agenda. He wasn't going to allow them to spread his fame beyond what he was ready to minister to at that time. He had set his limits, and they were firm. And so, deep versus wide. Then the second dilemma is inflow versus outflow. Inflow versus outflow. You know, I think in the clip, and if you saw it, sorry, it's a little herky-jerky, but, you know, Doug's laying there on the psychiatrist's couch, and he's saying, you know, work's first. Family's a close second, which his priorities are already out of whack there. But, you know, and then he says, I'm a distant third. I'm way back there. And I just need some time for me. And we hear that and we think, man, that's kind of selfish. You know? You don't need time for you until your kids graduate. And after that, I'm sure there'll be grandkids to take up that time and all of that. And yet, I think it is important for us to stop and think about this. Because if things are always flowing out, if we're always taking care of other people's needs, at some point, we run dry. And we turn into a raisin. And if we do stuff, we do it out of some sort of misguided sense of responsibility, and we end up resenting the very people we're supposed to be helping. And nobody wants to be helped out of resentment. And so, inflow versus outflow, this idea of having a healthy balance. Now, if all you have is inflow, all you're doing is things for you, you know what they call that? Stagnation. You just end up, you know, there are people who go to every Bible study, they go to every seminar, they read every Christian book, but they never actually minister out to anybody else. And they just end up a big stagnant pool. There's no health in that. So there needs to be some sort of a balance between inflow and outflow. Okay? And so Jesus shows us that balance. So the first thing is that time alone is essential. Time alone is essential. Look at verses 35 through 37 of Mark 1. It says, very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Simon and his companions went to look for him. And when they found him, they exclaimed, everyone is looking for you. You know, Jesus had a lot of people drawing on his time. He had a lot of people wanting things from him. Okay? And so, here's the thing. So many times we think, well, I can't get along with God. You know, it's been a long time since I've had that prayer time. Just set aside 30 minutes to read the Word and pray. But, you know, I've got these kids, and I've got this house to clean, or I've got this job, you know, I've got to be up real early in the morning, and there are people around me all the time, and how do you get that time away? I want to explain something to you here, because so many times when we make such a huge mistake, when we don't understand the humanity of Jesus, okay, we don't understand that this guy, I really want to get this home, okay, this guy sweat, he stank, he went to the bathroom, both numbers, all right, he was tired, he had to sleep, and here is a man who had been up into the wee hours with every person in the city. How many times has that happened to you? That every person in the town was standing at your door wanting something. Okay? He had every person in the city at his house to the wee hours of the night. He is sleeping in a fisherman's shack. Okay? On the floor, probably, with at least five other people pressed into the same room. Okay? You know, you think you got people on top of you? He probably literally, he's like, Peter, you know? I mean, dude is he's had a terrible night's sleep. He's crammed in with a bunch of people. He does not have an alarm clock. And he wakes up with one eye and he says, I need to spend time with my father. He gets up. You know, it's so meticulous there. He gets up. He walks out and he prays. Do you have a place for you to escape? You know, if you've got to be at work at 4 in the morning, I know this is going to sound messed up, but I'm going to say it. Go get up at 3. Now, I can say that because I did. You know, because I wasn't going to make it through a day at UPS with my faith intact without that time with Jesus. And so Jesus is, he's getting up early to spend that time alone. You know, a lot of times we think time alone is a luxury. No, it's not. Not if you want to live a healthy spiritual life. Not if you want to make a difference out in the world. It is not a luxury, okay? It is crucial. I've chosen that word specifically. It is essential. It was so much so that with every person in the city clamoring for his attention, you know, he cut them off in the middle of the night. You know, they're waking up first thing in the morning. They're going to be the first one in line this time. They're not going to miss out. You know, the minute it's daylight, they're at the door, but he's gone. He's been out there long enough that, first of all, he got up before dark. They've had time to come to the house, realize he's not there. The disciples have had time to look for him around the house, not find him, finally find him out in the middle of a desert place. You know, he's spent some significant time alone with God. Time alone is not a luxury. Please pencil in right now. When will you get alone with God? Half an hour a day, minimum. Just when will you do that? So many other things will go better in our lives. So time alone is essential. The other thing is live out your why. Live out your why. You know, time alone isn't everything. We don't get to move out and be a hermit, most of us. There's something else. We have a purpose. And for most people, that purpose is not to sit alone. There is a purpose to life. Live out your why. Look at chapter 1, verses 38 through 39. It says, Jesus replied, let us go somewhere else. To the nearby villages, so I can preach there also. That is why I have come. So he traveled throughout Galilee, preaching in their synagogues and driving out demons. See, Jesus was not going to react to the wishes of other people. It wasn't that he didn't love them. It was that he was on a mission, and that mission drove his actions. Okay? And he did not stay in that time alone, but he, I believe, drew from that time alone. You know, a person who is rooted in God is free to swim against the current. You know, as the river of life and other people's demands are washing over us, without that anchor in God, we will wash downstream. But Jesus did not wash downstream. He had every person in the city looking for him, and he said, let's leave. And when he did, I believe God's blessing went with him. That there was more power in his life, more results by following his why than there would have been by reacting to the demands of the crowd. And so my question this morning is, do you know your why? Jesus did. He asked us to follow him. I don't think he's going to ask us to follow him without giving us our why. What's your why? Write that down. If you don't know it, get along with God. See how that works together? If you don't know your why, get alone with God and His Word with a legal pad or whatever you like to write on, an envelope or an old napkin, and sit there and pray and say, God, what is my why? It's probably going to be something in the Bible, don't you think? You know, it's right there. And then as you make decisions, there will be times when you have to choose your why over what everybody else wants you to do. But that's the way to live life without regret. Inflow versus outflow. Live out your why. Well, so the three time dilemmas are, just to review, deep versus wide. Those close relationships versus a wide network. Inflow versus outflow. Getting what we need in here before we go to minister out there. And then the third one is compassion versus consequence. Now, this one may not be as clear. I think most of us kind of, when you saw that bullet point come up, you immediately went, oh, yeah, I see that. Yeah, I feel that. If you live in the real world, you probably felt these dilemmas. Okay? This one, you have experience. Let me just explain it a little better. Okay? So we're going to go ahead and go through verses 40 through 45. Then we're going to go back and take it apart piece by piece. So look at Mark chapter 1, verses 40 through 45 to kind of define this dilemma. It says, a man with leprosy came to him and begged him on his knees, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Filled with compassion, Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. I am willing, he said. Be clean. Immediately the leprosy left him and he was cured. Jesus sent him away at once with a strong warning. See that you don't tell this to anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest, and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them. Instead, he went out and began to talk freely, spreading the news. As a result, Jesus could no longer enter a town openly, but stayed outside in lonely places, yet people still came. To him from everywhere. You see, here's the problem with helping hurting people. Their lives are messy. And, you know, it's like when people see someone in a dilemma, maybe there's been an accident, or there's been an injury, or there's been an attack, and there's this whole group of people who don't want to pick up the phone and call the police. And why is that? Universally, they say, I didn't want to get involved. What they realized was, is this isn't just going to be a phone call. This is going to be testimony. This is going to be involvement with people I don't already know. This is going to be more time involved. You know, if you have somebody come up and they say, hey, could you just help me? I just need some help with my electric bill. And you help them. The problem is you just open the door to next time their electric bill is down. Okay? If someone says, I just need someone to talk to, you're like, okay, great. 30 minutes. I've got 30 minutes. The problem is 30 minutes will not resolve their issue. You've just opened the door. You see, when we set out to care about other people, we immediately risk consequences. It will cost us, and it will cost us beyond that moment. And the question is, what do we do with that dilemma? How do we resolve it? Can we fix everyone's problems? Do we spend all of our time with somebody who's, it seems that their issues are never dealt with? There are consequences to helping. That's why more people don't do it. It hurts. It can be hard. So what do? Well, first of all, you follow Jesus. Listen to your heart. Look at verses 40 through 42 of Mark 1. A man with leprosy came to him and begged him on his knees, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Filled with compassion, Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. I am willing. Be clean. Immediately, the leprosy left him, and he was cured. Now, first of all, I want to note that in this case, the leper should not have approached Jesus. Okay? He was breaking all convention, all propriety, and he was risking the health of this man who'd done so much good for other people. This guy had nothing to lose and everything to gain. On the other hand, Jesus had everything to lose and nothing to gain by this encounter. Okay? That this is a risky situation from the outset. That as this guy comes up and falls before Jesus, Jesus is immediately at risk. Not only at risk of catching this disease, but at risk of becoming ceremonially defiled, a risk of raising the eyebrows of religious leaders, and at risk of drawing attention that he at this point did not want. There was risk involved. And yet Jesus, you know, he says, if you want to help me, you can. That's what the leper says. And Jesus says, I am willing. You know, it says that he was stirred with compassion. Some manuscripts in the Greek say he was filled with indignation. That he, at seeing this man's condition, he was just so hostile. He was angry toward the hurt and the pain that this man had been through. Through the marginalization by society and the rejection, the exclusion from all of the religious rituals and the life of the Jewish community, Jesus was stirred to the point of indignation. And the question that I have for you this morning is, what stirs your heart to that level? What stirs your heart to the point of indignation? What is it? What injustice in the world? What person in need causes such compassion in you that you are stirred? You see, the thing is if we think about it, if I begin to open the door and I get into where that hurt is, I am at risk. If you open the door to where that hurt is, you are at risk. That the needs may consume you. That's the risk. That there may be harm that befall you. But think of the cost of ignoring our hearts. Think of the cost of suppressing that passion, of squelching that indignation. We lose ourselves. We lose ourselves. Out of fear of the consequences, we could lose our very selves. And Jesus has to live authentically out of his center, out of who he is. Jesus doesn't say, oh, since you're making such a big deal out of it. Jesus says, I am willing. And Jesus isn't just willing to say, okay, back up, I'll pray for you. Jesus reaches through all of the prohibitions, all of the fears, all of the risk. He reaches through and he touches this untouchable man on the head. He says, I am willing. From the center of my being, from the very depth of my heart, I will reach out and touch you. To listen to his heart. That's the first thing. The other, explain your expectations. You know, this wasn't for nothing. Jesus didn't just, you know, Jesus wasn't a softie. He wasn't a soft touch. Okay? Jesus wasn't in charge of a welfare system in his state. Okay? Jesus also had some expectations for this man that he helped. And look at verses 43 through 44. Jesus sent him away at once with a strong warning. This isn't a suggestion. Okay? Jesus has a strong preference here, and he is communicating it very clearly. Look how specific his language is. See that you don't tell this to anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest, and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your healing as a testimony to them. In what I do, I have various people who come up and they'll want some money or some help with things. And one thing that I started doing is that when people come up and they ask me for a loan, I will expect them to pay me back. This may be an almost homeless person, okay? This may be somebody that's living in a hotel or whatever, and they say, hey, could I borrow $20? I say, sure, when are you going to pay me back? Then I see him again. I'm like, hey, where's my $20? Why do I do that? Because remember we said that mutual relationships are the more important ones? That when we just enable, when we're constantly giving out what we don't ever expect, what we do is not only a disservice to ourselves, but a disservice to the other person. Okay? And Jesus is saying, you know, I'm going to do this for you because I want to. And when I loan money to somebody, I want to. I don't want them to do without. But I need you to do something for me, Jesus says. I need you to keep this secret. I have an expectation, and I will explain it to you very clearly. You know, if there are people with chronic needs and they're coming to you, it's not wrong to say, you know, what is it that you are doing to rise above this? If someone is constantly coming with the exact same need, then we have to involve them in the process because that is the way to treat somebody like a human being. And Jesus wanted to treat this man who had spent so much time on the outside of society, he wanted to treat him like an insider. He says, you know what, you're going to become a freak, and so am I if you start talking about this. I'll tell you what, why don't you act like a Jew and go to the temple? That's what you haven't been allowed to do. You haven't been allowed to go to the temple, but now you can. All of the options are open to you, and he refused to take them. But Jesus had to trust God with the outcomes. Look at verse 45. Instead, he went out and began to talk freely, spreading the news. Now, you can't blame the guy, right? Who reads this and thinks, well, I'm a jerk, you know? We can't blame him, but Jesus was very specific. Jesus wasn't playing games here. He wasn't like, now remember, don't tell anybody, hint, hint, you know? He really didn't want this guy to tell this, but he did it anyway. Spreading the news. As a result, Jesus could no longer enter a town openly, but stayed outside in lonely places, yet people still came to him from everywhere. You know, Jesus had to go with plan B, didn't he? And you can help people, and you can spell out expectations, but you can't make anybody do anything, right? I always tell people, you can't push a rope. All you can do is pull on your end. And if somebody tugs back, then you're in a relationship. But until they do, you're not. And so Jesus really, and it's interesting, it says that Jesus could not. Now, let's dwell on that, okay? Here's God in flesh. And it says he could not. That the decisions of this man had limited his options. And as we go out to help people, there will be some people who will do things that will limit our options. But that doesn't mean that we give up. That doesn't mean that we quit living out of our center. It just means that we trust God with the outcomes. And so while Jesus had to be in lonely places, God still worked with it, right? People still came out there. So that's time management, Jesus style. And, you know, I want to point out that in each of these dilemmas, for Jesus, Jesus was in no dilemma. You know, when it comes to deep versus wide, Jesus made his home base, his ministry base as well. That while Jesus is, he's there and he's investing in the health of the people and everyone's at his door, guess what he's doing? He's training Peter, Andrew, James, and John to do ministry. That he's showing them that when people come to your door after sunset, you let them in. He's showing them how to pray with power. He's showing them that they need to say when. That this is not a dilemma. That Jesus is caring for the crowds by caring for his people, and he's caring for his people by caring for the crowds. And that in the inflow and the outflow, this is no dilemma for Jesus. That Jesus is going to the secret place so that he can receive power and direction for his ministry out in the world. That this is not something that he's got to balance. He's not spinning plates like this, and I've got to get a little prayer time in, and now I've got to talk to these people. Everything he's doing is contributing to the whole in every moment. Not a single second is wasted for Jesus. And in compassion versus consequences, again, everything fits together. Risking the consequence is compassion. Jesus didn't have to choose. And yet he lived a fully human life, and I think we don't quite get that. Here's the thing. Jesus had lived in eternity past, okay? And he was now given 3 years to complete his ministry. It's like if I said to you, you have a week left to live. How would you order your time? How important would time become to you? See, Jesus had an idea that this wasn't going to make it very much longer. Jesus didn't sit around and think, I have decades. He is our ultimate example of time management. So here's the big idea. We can manage time like Jesus when we seek to do God things rather than good things. And there is a difference. There are a myriad of good things that you can do in any given day. But only a few of those are in God's purpose for us and in His timing for us. Maybe only one in a given day. And so that time alone with Him, that time of seeking His face and His will. You want to live a life and get to the end and feel satisfied, whether it's 33 years or whether it's 100. You want to redeem whatever time you have left, whether you're 5 or however old. Seek the will of God. Invest in that time alone with Him. Live out of your why. Your heart stirs you. Like I said, I need this as much as anybody. I sometimes feel like I'm on this teeter-totter and I'm investing too much here and too little there. But what I've realized is that when I find the center, when I find the presence of the Lord, that there is no dilemma. Maybe you're off whack, out of whack. Maybe you're out of balance this morning. If you are, I'd like to suggest that you spend some time alone with God. Just start there. And if you need to spend some time being prayed for, you're going to have an opportunity to do that over the next 3 songs, 4 songs. Adam's going to be in the back there in our prayer garden to pray with you. But I think this is something that relates to all of us. All of us need to, especially myself, and Sam preaching to me, all of us need to take it to heart. Follow Jesus' example in the dilemmas